now listening to the Seventh Rounders.
Hello, everyone. Happy Easter to those who celebrate. John and Chad here. The Final Four is set.
A little holiday edition Final Four, Chad and John after dark. I mean, yeah. Dreams are made of this.
Sunday night.
It's a special episode for a special day, special weekend. Christ is risen, again, to those who celebrate, and so have the NC State Wolfpack. Oh, my goodness. The Wolfpack are in the Final Four. The NC State Wolfpack are in the Final Four. And Chad, I got to start here. You know, I know we're going to dive in hot. I want to get to the holiday and all this, but I can't stop thinking about March 15th, Friday night. I'm laying in bed, Virginia moneyline bet. It looks good. Oh, it looks so good. Virginia playing NC State in the ACC tournament. It's deep into the second half, Chad. I don't know if did you watch this game?
March 15th, that would have been a Saturday, because NC State beat Syracuse, and then it was a Friday, so the semis.
Friday.
I did not have eyes on this game.
52 seconds left, and Virginia was up 6. And they eventually foul. NC State hits the 3 free throws, and NC State goes down there, eventually ties the game with 1 second left. They actually fouled Virginia with 6 seconds left. They missed the free throw, got the rebound, ran down. And O'Connell headed the buzzer, forced overtime. They never looked back since then. So I've been thinking about that all night. But how was your Easter?
It was good. Had the parents in town this weekend. They left. They got on the road this morning. It was a good family-filled holiday weekend. Got to watch some ball. Got to watch some baseball. Really all over the place. But you know,
opening weekend
Sunday night, yeah,
a treat. Now are the parents still up?
Lord, no. No. They're 9:15. So how it works at the Messiers is my mom doesn't try and fight it. Like, she'll sneak upstairs, she'll announce 8:15, 8:30. She's it's bedtime. My dad'll be like, 7:30, want to go down to the couch, watch a game, watch a movie, asleep within 15 minutes, and then gets up with 10 minutes left and claims he watched the whole thing. It's outrageous. So they're both asleep. I'm not far behind them. You and I are going to put on a strong 30 to 40 minutes. We're going to entertain. We're entertainers. That's what we're here for. And we're going to go to bed.
Put on a show on the holiday. Listen, that's how I felt. UNC Bama. It was great, but that's how I felt. How you just described your dad, UNC Bama. I fell asleep at halftime, probably 45 minutes slumber for me. Woke up with about 10 minutes left in the game, just in time to watch UNC slowly crash and burn in front of my eyes. Easter weekend was great, dude. A lot of good ball. I mean, talk about feeling like I was in the trenches. I finished Masters of the Air this weekend. I felt like Rosie, plane goes down for the Sweet 16, got a battle back. Just like the round of 64 was bad, the Sweet 16 was bad. And we fought back during the Elite Eight, really on the big back of the refrigerator, DJ Burns and NC State. I mean, without that game, it was a tough time, but all it takes is one. Jumped all over that money line. Can't thank NC State enough. Go Wolfpack. But, I think the story – go ahead.
I was going to say we can start on Thursday and make our way forward, but interrupt.
Yeah, so go ahead. We can. I was just going to say, I think the storyline, we're going to dive into everything deeper, but the inevitable, it just feels like UConn and Purdue have been on a crash course really the whole season. I've wanted to doubt both against my better judgment. I stopped doubting UConn a few rounds ago. Continue to doubt Purdue. It's got to stop happening, but we'll see if it does because they play the Wolfpack. But
I have no doubt faded Purdue all along. I mean, from dating back to early January, UConn I've kind of stayed away from. I don't mess with them. If I'm gonna bet a UConn game, I'm betting on UConn is how I've been playing things, but Purdue, for the most part, I've tried to fade until this morning or this afternoon. Finally, I had to hop on board and take them.
I did hammer them as my biggest bet in round two, was them against Utah State. Don't know why I went against that afterwards the last two rounds, but I digress. Hell of a run. You know what? Let's start. You're right. Let's go to Thursday. Sweet 16. Clemson, Arizona. I mean, start off the weekend with an upset. Clemson gets it done. The Muffin Man, Shefflin, keeps his incredible tournament going. Just really gets under the skin of the Arizona bigs. Caleb Love, 0-9 from three. PJ Hall did his thing. Like I said, Shefflin played well. Chase Hunter kind of became a little bit of a March guard. He had a lot of really, really impressive moments here down the last couple rounds. They overwhelmed Arizona. Arizona just didn't do enough. That's kind of been the story with the Tommy Lloyd era, recent years with Arizona in the postseason. But what did you see out there?
I mean, I think definitely Dave, but you in a capacity of what as well have been right about Arizona basically all tournament long. Maybe it was more Dave, but just not buying in, not believing in them. Listen, they did make it to the Sweet 16, but like they just, and it was either yours or Dave's text on Thursday. Like, I don't know what the hell they were doing offensively. Like, it just was so unorganized. And Clemson just looked way more prepared. And then, you know, Clemson, especially, and, you know, even the loss this weekend, like the offensive rebounding from Clemson's been, you know, very impressive to me. And I don't know, it felt like they deserved to win that game. I think it's the best way to put it.
Yeah, they tried to run the Caleb Love offense. I mean, you saw it fail at North Carolina and you saw it fail here with Arizona. Clemson got it done, advanced to the Elite Eight. I don't know. That might be the deepest they've been. I should have looked that up before the show, but they got it done. No one thought they'd be there, including myself. Definitely didn't. UConn took care of San Diego State, where I was right about the Clemson spread and them keeping it close. And, you know, I didn't say they went out right, but I was relatively close to being right here. San Diego State tragically didn't cover the first half spread, although they were covering, I think it was +7.5, basically the whole first half. And Cam Spencer hits a late three before halftime, and San Diego State goes down, misses their shot. So they don't cover. They do keep it close in the first half, and then they just get blown out in the second half. As UConn has done, they win by 30. Nothing was close. Two tournaments in a row, UConn has continued to just blow out every single team that they play against. It is amazing. I thought of this. I was like, how the hell did Seton Hall beat this team in the regular season? Don't know. They did, though. They'd Kadarius Richmond, a March guard that never was. Shout out to Seton Hall in the Final Four of the NIT right now. But yeah, UConn took care of San Diego State. Was never really, you know, it never really felt like it was out of reach for UConn.
Yeah, not much more to add there. No. I mean, going in, go ahead.
I'm gonna say no revenge spot. The revenge spot never was.
Well, that was in the back of my mind. I think I avoided that game altogether from a betting perspective. I just, like I said, I can't fade Connecticut. But I also, San Diego State, the rematch spot, you know, I was intrigued by that one, but no, it was a boat racing. It was a firm tush kick right there. Alabama.
One of the firmer tush kicks you can remember, you know.
Yep. Alabama survives against UNC. I don't know if survives the right word, but.
Pulls through, I think is a better way to put it. UNC kind of pisses their shit away. They kind of shit and piss themselves at the same time the Tar Heels did, especially in those last 2 minutes. People are going to remember the Withers wide open three, 20% three-point shooter late in the game. To a lesser extent, people are remembering the Baycott missed dunk. I think that one was a little bit more significant. You know, if you see an open three, if you're Withers, how many of us aren't shooting that on that stage? It was close. It was just barely a little bit strong. But Baycott missing a dunk is completely unacceptable. UNC pisses the game away, and Bama advances to the Elite Eight after defeating UNC here. I mean, they shot the ball, you know, really well, 42% from three. Sears has been exceptional all tournament. You know, he's making a case for first team all tournament. But Nelson Griffin and Estrada, you know, the supporting cast has been fantastic. We'll talk more about Pringle in the next game, but I mean, Bama thoroughly impressive. They get it done against a team that I think is more complete in North Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think the storyline is two of the final four teams, the pod is pretty heavily, you know, faded for the last couple weeks now. Couple weeks might be an exaggeration, but NC State and Alabama. And Alabama's just found ways to make shots on, you could argue, a flawed team overall, but UNC had the perfect stretch of games set up to make the Final Four, and they couldn't get the job done. So shame on them.
RJ Davis was anointed March guard by us. He had earned that. He had played with it, and then he goes 0-9, just like his buddy Caleb Love in the Sweet 16. And ultimately, those two guys sunk their teams. I mean, that's unacceptable. And there goes North Carolina. So I was where I was right was Clemson. Where I was, flirting with being right with San Diego State. Where I was dead wrong twice with the Tar Heels and Bama. I was on the record saying I didn't like Bama going into this. Just didn't think they were that talented. These boys have meshed really well right when you need them to. Nate Oates is coaching his fucking ass off. He gets a lot of shit, deserved in some areas, undeserved in others. Bama advances to the Elite Eight. Illinois, Iowa State wrapped up the day Thursday. I mean, the game was 72-69 Illinois. They get the job done. Felt like they were in control. Felt like a game that was, you know, a little bit more than what the margin of victory actually was. Terrence Shannon showed what he's made of in this game. I mean, totally dominated, 29 points. They didn't really have an answer for him. You know, a team as good as Iowa State is defensively, they couldn't figure him out. Whereas they figured out the rest of the team. Coleman Hawkins, the only one, other one, double figures. I turned this one off because I was frustrated watching Iowa State. I had taken them. I didn't know what to do, really. I was really unsure. This was the hardest one to bet. Ended up taking the Cyclones. What'd you see?
This one, I didn't make it up for the whole game. Thursday, it just wound up being too late for me. But I was on Illinois. I didn't feel great about it. I thought it was kind of a 50-50 game. And I don't know, some of the experience with Illinois, I guess, helped them pull through.
They got into foul trouble. You know, they had 23 fouls. That's not going to get it done. Their starting guards didn't really do much. They got 26 off the bench from Curtis Jones. Iowa State didn't get enough from their starters. Simply put,
John, you would know this. Iowa State, from a three-point shooting perspective, I'm looking here. They took six total three-pointers. Is that on par for them, or is that light?
That is pretty on par.
They don't shoot a lot of threes. Okay.
Let me go ahead and confirm that with you. TJ Otzelberger, well, though, excellent coach. What?
Of the starters, there were only six attempted threes. There's the Jones dude off the bench attempted seven. So I lied. They took 13 threes.
They do get a good amount of their point distribution from the three-pointer. So that would have been really light. They're 70th in the country in point distribution from the three. So, yes, to answer your question, yes. But, they don't get it done. TJ Otzelberger was a Coach of the Year semifinalist with Lamont Paris, Dan Hurley, and I believe Kelvin Sampson. So we'll see who wins that award. Moving on to Friday, NC State gets it done against Marquette in the matchup rematch of the 1974 national title game. I mean, we talked about it off the top, and obviously, you know, NC State gets it done for Norm Sloan. They take care of Marquette. Marquette looked out of sorts all game. They only scored 58 points. Colick couldn't shoot for his life, neither could Cam Jones. Iguodaro was dominated by DJ Burns, the refrigerator, the fucking March legend himself. And NC State moved on. What do you feel about Marquette? I mean, can Shaka Smart, can we trust this guy in March?
It's not that I don't trust him. It's more of, I don't know, you compare him to Arizona even. Or more so, I'm just thinking Colick, like, you didn't get enough from him when you needed him. He was fine. I think he had 17, wasn't overly efficient shooting. And I don't know, you look at Caleb Love the day before, Davis the day before, like guards that showed up game in, game out during the year didn't show up in a meaningful, I guess meaningful might be a little unfair, but in a significant way, like you needed them to in a Sweet 16 game. And you know, NC State's got balance. And I don't know. I think with how NC State's playing, I'm not shocked with the result of that game. And then on the Shaka front, I think he's still doing very well for that program. I wouldn't have any complaints, you know, from where I'm sitting now or if I was a Marquette fan, but I don't know if you feel differently.
I just don't know if they, you know, they haven't, that's as far as they've gotten since his Final Four run 2011 VCU. I feel like this is the best roster he's had. We'll see if he can get a better roster together in Marquette. I don't know if he can. Kolick shot 38% from three during the regular season. It was 27% in the tournament, particularly bad in the last two games. Only made one three-pointer after the round of 64. Got to be better than that. I mean, they just could not score at all, and it sinks them as it would sink many. Next game of the night, Purdue took care of Gonzaga. Gonzaga was up like five early. They were really, you know, fighting in the first half, kind of similar to how Gonzaga, Kansas was close in the first half. But in the opposite way for Gonzaga this time, Purdue pulls away in the second half. They win by 12. They're up by, I think, 20. It felt like Greg and EK, you know, foul trouble for Gonzaga. Anton Watson, as soon as he went out of the game with three or four fouls with about 15 minutes left, Purdue just put the pedal to the metal and they never looked back. Felt like they couldn't miss a three. Mark Few, I think, got the most out of this team. I don't think Gonzaga, you know, I think Sweet 16 might have been their ceiling. I was optimistic they could get further. What do you make of Gonzaga's season?
This was the game I was the most confident in when we recorded last week. I know I dropped early, but I mean,
me too.
I hammered Gonzaga, money line spread, and just not, I know you mentioned they went up five early, but I mean, Purdue controlled that game for the most part. And I was really surprised. I just going into that game, I thought Gonzaga was playing as well as everyone. And just based on that result and how that game played out, I learned my lesson. I took Purdue the following round. But no, I agree with you. Definitely not the most talented Gonzaga team Fuse had there. But I think a successful season, you know, for that program all in all. I don't know. I was just wrong on that one.
I mean,
just straight up wrong.
It completely changes the game when the bigs against Edie cannot. They had a foul trouble and the refs just blow the whistle. I mean, Gonzaga was top 20 in the nation in avoiding fouls. And their three big men combined for 18, two of them fouled out. You know, Greg stayed in. He had three total fouls, but those three fouls came in the first like 20 minutes of the game. So he was out for a while. I mean, what are you going to do? Edie, I think, drew 15 or 16 today, too, against Tennessee. But we'll come back to that. Duke takes care of Houston. Houston loses Jamal Shedd about 10 minutes into the game. Quite frankly, never looked the same. Houston did go up to an 8-0 lead, and Duke took a punch. They punched back. By the time Shedd went out, I think they were down 2 or 3 points. Now, I will say, you know, I know Connor's going to be fired up when him and Dave record later in the week about this one, about Duke. But, you know, maybe less now that they lost. But yeah, Houston was never the same without Shedd. I think that's a completely different result. I hate to play the shoulda, woulda, coulda game, but Houston looked like Chad, me and you are running point guard on the Houston offense after Shedd went down. Cryer can't run the point, and Emmanuel Sharp totally disappeared. Roberts was their best form of offense, it felt like, for a lot of the game, which you ain't going to beat Duke when that's the case. And, you know, to their credit, they only lost by three. It was down in the last possession. I thought Duke should have won by a lot more. What do you think of Kelvin Sampson's exit here in the Sweet 16?
Definitely, you know, they're disappointed. I think that program as a whole, you know, this is what their third year in a row being a perennial, you know, an elite program. First of all, props in the world to Duke. I mean, they played well. They did what they had to, specifically defensively. But no, I mean, Houston was a completely different team after that injury. And it is what it is. I mean, no complaints, no excuses. Duke deserved to win that game. But I think it probably is different if, you know, injuries aren't a factor. So that's
Sampson really probably wish he held on to Trayvon Mark, who went to Arkansas in the preseason from the portal. Would have been a backup, good viable backup. does he need to change his philosophy, Sampson? He's gotten to the, you know, the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, I think the Final Four once recently, and they can't get over the hump. It feels like they just can't score. Dave made a great point about it was really in the Illinois-Iowa State preview. Pick the team that can score. I mean, look at what you got left. Teams that can score. And NC State, who's just Cinderella. Cinderella with a golden slipper and DJ Refrigerator Burns doing whatever he wants out there. But, I mean, Bama, Purdue, and UConn, those teams can fucking light up the scoreboard. Does Sam's need to change his philosophy?
I would say no. I mean, his philosophy's put that program in as good a spot as they could, you know, dream of. So I'd say no. I think it's more a matter of winning a national title's really, really hard. You know,
yeah.
I know from a fan's perspective, these, you know, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, round of 32 losses are obviously frustrating, but the UConns of the world don't grow on trees. And you even look at Gonzaga over the past, what, 8-10 years, you know, they're not going and winning titles every year, or even making Final Fours every year when they're going into tournaments as one seed. So I think it's more patience than anything. I have no doubt Houston continues to recruit and develop players like this. They'll get a title. Yeah. There's coming.
Trust the process, says Chad for Mr. Sam. She said, I mean, you can't blame it. It's gotten them far. They need to get a little bit more. They just need to add a couple more scores. I think Sampson's got to do a better job adding a couple more scores, maybe a little more depth. I feel like they always run a little thin. But they'll be hanging around. Hell of a first year in the Big 12 for Houston. Last game of the Sweet 16 was Creighton, Tennessee. One of the better games. I mean, a game of runs, truly. Tennessee sustained a big run. Creighton fought really hard back in the second half after, I think, Tennessee is a 16-0 run, and Creighton was on like 22-7. Made it interesting. Tennessee ends up taking over. They win by 7. Dalton Connect, fantastic tournament out of the SEC Player of the Year. He put up 26 against Creighton. Him and Baylor Shireman, he put up 25. I mean, hell of a matchup right there. It was one of the best one-on-one matchups of the tournament. They got after it. Creighton, impressive season. This is what I kind of – I didn't think they had enough juice. Creighton was one of the worst teams, bottom 10 in the entire, you know, 350-plus teams in the nation, in generating turnovers defensively and against a team like Tennessee where you got an elite scorer like Connect, you got a good ball handler like Ziegler. Tough to do much. You know, it's tough to win that. I like Tennessee. This was a winner I had. What do you think about Creighton this year?
I mean,
disappointed this, I think, or are you happy with it?
No, I think you have to be happy with that season. I think you get to a Sweet 16, regardless of the program, you got to look back and be happy with how things played out. Creighton, it's not like Creighton was a perennial top, you know, top five ranked team all year like Houston. So if one team's, you know, has a right to be more disappointed, I think it's definitely Houston. I think that was just a really good game. I nightcap, so I did not see the whole thing, but it was a tough game to. I looked at this game like I looked at Iowa State, Illinois. I really didn't know. You know, it worked out for me the first night taking Illinois. This one I took Creighton. It didn't work out. John, if these two teams played 10 times, you think it's Tennessee that wins 6 of 10? You think it's Tennessee that wins 8 of 10? Where do you land there?
I think that's a good comp, this and that Illinois-Iowa State game. I think both series are 6-4 with the team that won. Quite honestly, I think Illinois would win 6-4. I think Tennessee would win 6-4. Shout out to McDermott, though. I mean, he's on a hell of a run at Creighton. I mean, let's talk Creighton. That's not like perennial powerhouse by any stretch. He's trying to make him a literal Blue Jay blood. 4 years in a row, he's brought him to the tournament. 4 years in a row, he's won at least one game. He's gone to the Sweet 16, the Round of 32, the Elite Eight, and the Sweet 16 this year. He's trying to get over the hump. He's got talent over there. We'll see if they can keep it up with UConn, Marquette, or what that Big East looks like next year. Always a fun conference. Great Sweet 16. A lot of expectations coming in. It did not disappoint. My favorite game of the Sweet 16 had to be, honestly, I think Clemson, Arizona, because I won money on it. It was the first one. It was really exciting. It was during my happy hour. Loved it. What was your favorite game?
I'm kind of between the NC State game and then that the Bama game. I'll go NC State. I mean, listen,
yep.
They're the outlier of this, or they were the outlier. They still are the outlier of the remaining teams. And I don't know. I think at that point I had faded them so often. I had to buy in, kind of like Purdue today. So I just enjoyed watching that, you know, hitting that money line. And it wasn't like it was a blowout. Yeah. I know result probably isn't as close as some of the others, but I, you know, really enjoyed that game.
I would have voted Bama, North Carolina. I mean, that was a really good game, but I took too much emotional and financial pain on UNC losing. Couldn't vote for it. Only two duds, really one and a half. I mean, the first half of that Gonzaga-Purdue game was fantastic. And it was funny to watch, you know, Mark Few on the sideline chuckling as this game is winding down, is going to handshake with Painter. And, you know, he just mouths F me in the taint. That Zach Edey guy is a problem. I think that's what I saw him word out there. Chad, I don't know if you caught that. No, I'm just kidding. He's a listener of the program. Elite Eight happened over the weekend here, over Easter weekend. UConn, oh my God, just pounded Illinois into the sand after a first half where Illinois was only down five. And quite frankly, you know, if they would have made a couple free throws, you know, made a couple more layups than they missed, they probably are winning that half by 5-6 points. And 30-0 run for UConn. That's all you got to say about it. The triple kill shot, very, very rare. Can UConn be stopped?
I think it's going to be very tough, personally. I mean, that game just Shannon was not good enough. I mean,
he's terrible.
What we talked about, Sweet
16, 8 points.
He put up 29. But no, this one, 8 points on 2-12 shooting, just like you're basically dead the minute you hear that. Like if you go in saying, hey, all your other guys can play great, but Shannon's going to be 2-12 for 8 points. Highly unlikely. I know the Mosque, is that the name?
The Mosque. He was the only one that looked like he prepared and wanted to be out there for Illinois against UConn.
He needed to shoot more. I mean, he finished like 7-14, something like he
7-13. Yeah. 2-3 from three.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, he needed to set up the offense. That's the problem with Terrence Shannon, is I don't think he's a point guard. I think he needs to get the ball from someone. Illinois didn't have a point guard this year. They didn't have a true one. It didn't work out. Coleman Hawkins looked completely, I should say, overmatched by Klingon. They didn't have a point guard. They didn't have a true big man. Guerrier shot 38% from three all season. He goes 1-for-4 in this game, and boy, did he look timid and uncomfortable anytime he got the ball. When he was open, he wasn't looking to shoot. Here's the thing with Illinois. Illinois is a team of forwards. They're a team of three fours, no point guard, no true center, and it was completely exposed against UConn, whereas their athleticism kind of got him here. But, yeah, UConn dominated.
Hopefully when Dave and Connor record, Dave like formally apologizes to Klingon. I mean, he's been taking shots at that dude for 2 weeks now, constantly. And I think he's moved on from that because Klingon was awesome. I mean, UConn just looking at the score sheet, it's like, I mean, they could go anywhere. Like they don't have a worry in the world.
UConn was 17%, made 3 3-pointers, and they won by 25. It's terrifying. In the second game on Saturday, Alabama took care of Clemson, win by 7. It felt closer than 7. Clemson really battled the entire game. I mean, Joe Girard got scorching hot in the last 5 minutes, couldn't miss a three down the stretch. Wasn't enough, you know, too little too late. He did lead Clemson in scoring. PJ Hall was in and out of foul trouble the entire game. He was very hard for Clemson to keep a consistent five out there. Pringle was fantastic. Pringle hadn't done much, but Pringle with a double-double for Bama, he was causing continuous problems. The Muffin Man, Ian Shufflin, his magic ran out, but he did have a double-double. Like I said, Hunter had a good game. He had some bright moments, but ultimately, man, Bama just shot the lights out. 44%. They were 16 to 36 from three. All their other made shots were layups or dunks. Their shot chart was beautiful. They, I think, had one shot that was not a three and was a two that was outside of the paint. The Nate Oates three layup dunk and get free throws offense works perfection here. I mean, it gets him into the Elite Eight. Mark Sears, 7 for 14 from three. I mean, dude, it felt like he was making it every time he released it. It felt like it was going in the bucket.
If Alabama can make 16 threes like they did here, if they can make 16 threes against UConn, do you see them winning?
Yeah, that's their recipe to win. I mean, they need to. They probably need to make 20. They need Jaren Stevenson, the 6'11 skinny freshman coming off the bench out of absolutely nowhere. I mean, during the season, he was 31% from three, but he's only getting 16 minutes a game. He comes out against Clemson yesterday. He puts up 19. He drills six threes. He was absolutely unconscious, Stevenson was. He drilled five threes, 5 of 8, and he played some fantastic defense off the bench. If that happens, if guys like Sears, Griffin, Estrada, Grant Nelson, you know, stay hot, yeah, Bama can give UConn a run. Now, I don't know if that will happen. That's like when, you know, in the Avengers, when he's like, you know, what are all the scenarios that this could happen? And Doctor Strange, you know, throws up, yeah, there's one. That's probably your Bama scenario. There's one.
Yeah. They need.
You're a little like Doctor Strange.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Cumberbatch. I actually don't know how to say his last name. As a Gamecock fan, very happy to see Clemson lose. And speaking of, as a Gamecock fan, very happy to see Tennessee lose. As a better, I was a little sad. But Purdue takes care of Tennessee. This was a very entertaining game. Probably the most entertaining game, I think, of the Elite Eight was Purdue-Tennessee. I mean, really wire to wire, good basketball. You have your two players of the year after Edie vanquished one of the player of the years in Shannon the game before. He takes out Connect. Connect gave it everything he could. 37 points for Tennessee. I mean, he was really their entire team. He was their entire game plan. 14 of 31. He shot 31 shots. The team shot 62. He shot half of their shots. 6 of 12 from three. Wasn't enough. Sakai Ziegler put up 9. No one else put up more than 6. Josiah Jordan James put up 8. But Edie put up 40. 40 and 16. He's extremely talented. He's big. He's fluid now. He's athletic enough. You know, he pulls down the rebounds. He gets every bounce goes his way. It feels like the balls brick off the rim and they clink right to him. It's unbelievable. And on top of that, he gets every call from the ref. Great player. Fortunate. Hell of a run he's on. Hell of a run Purdue is on. Good for them. And Painter, you know, he shuts up the haters. They're going to the Final Four. Good Lord, did they need it. I mean, if any brand needed it, Purdue did. Their fans, they win. Fans of the tournament right now. I mean, it sounds like a home game. Every game they're playing, it is so loud. Is Purdue inevitable? Is it Purdue-UConn crash course here?
I think so. I mean, listen, Edie, you know, a poor man's Fab Melo. I mean, he's just can do whatever he wants. Connect, tried his hardest. I mean, he took a lot of shots. But Purdue's inevitable. I just think UConn's a Death Star. I think most years Purdue is in a very good spot. I don't know if they can match up with the Death Star. Back to the game itself. I thought it was a very entertaining game. I thought it was a good game, good basketball both ways, obviously, you know, dominated by the two best players in college basketball this year. They both put on a show, but too much Purdue.
That's exactly what the tournament wanted. I mean, that's what the networks wanted, was Connect 80 battle. I mean, that was great for TV. That was great for viewers, social media, everything about it. That was an awesome game. Again, congrats to Purdue. Hate that they're there. I hate watching them play, but they've earned it. They get it done. And another note, dude, they were second in the nation in three-point percentage in the regular season. Who was first? Trivia question. Who do you think was first?
And BYU.
No. It was Kentucky. I don't want to spend too much time on that. Kentucky was first.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that. Purdue, I just mentioned 3-for-18 against Illinois, 3-for-15 against Tennessee. Purdue is winning these games without even making threes, which is exactly what they did well all season.
Wait, you said it was Purdue that had this? Who had the second highest three-point percentage this year?
Purdue.
Okay.
Both of them are 40%.
When you have a big man like that, my goodness, the offseason should just be portal. Who is the best
shooter? There's a nugget that Painter started employing a three-point shooting drill for his whole team, and it's working. Not necessarily his last couple of games. They haven't needed it, though. And then the Elite Eight wraps up with the biggest upset and the Cinderella team. I was hesitant to call them a Cinderella in the Sweet 16, but now that they're in the Final Four, they are a Cinderella, no doubt about it, with a golden slipper. Make that a size 16 on a big foot, a big old DJ Burns Jr. The Swiffer picker-upper of a refrigerator out there. I mean, he's fleet-footed. He's nimble. He can hit you with a spin move, a swim move. He can run into you, run over you. And he runs into the Final Four. DJ Burns and DJ Horn put up 49 of the 76 for NC State. What more can you say? Goodbye, Duke. Goodbye, Kyle Filipowski, Mr. Foul Out with 5 minutes left in the game. I'm so happy for the Wolfpack. I'm so happy for the Wolfpack. That's awesome.
I'm happy as well. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from what Duke did this year, but to me, I thought getting to the Elite Eight, they overperformed. I just didn't think that team was that good all year. So I didn't see them as serious contenders, even if they beat NC State. But no, I mean, NC State literally just won't die. They're just
won't die.
Running hot. I don't know. Most teams can't run this hot this long. NC State's figured it out. And
what?
I mean, we're going to have a Final Four matchup in the post.
I mean, if you would have told me with 58 seconds left in that game against Virginia in the semifinals, the ACC tournament, that the NC State Wolfpack were going to the men's Final Four this year, I would have spilled a hot pot of coffee all over myself and told you to fuck off. I would have said there's no way. Unbelievable run. Improbable as all can be. They beat Duke. And honestly, that win against Duke in the ACC tournament, I think that was the game before Virginia. That was the one I think that has given them the confidence to get them to this point. So good for them. Good for Kevin Keats. Totally rewrote the narrative on his coaching career and this team, this program. They only played seven guys tonight. That's all they needed. They don't run deep. Who knows, you know, what I guess we can start talking about a preview, what they'll do in the next game. But quick on Duke, Tyrese Proctor, 0-for-9 from the field, no points in the game. Cannot have that from him. Jeremy Roach did not hit a three. He only had 13. He did score the first bucket of the game. It was the only first bucket score. He was plus 800 that I've hit, I think, every game that I bet it. So shout out to Roach for that. But yeah, I mean, McCain at 32. Duke was so dependent on just felt like one guy. They really needed two or three to be hot in these games to win them, and they had one guy today. And Flipkowski was completely outplayed by DJ Burns. It was nice to see. It was really nice
to see. You can't have only one guy making three-point shots in the Elite Eight when you're not like a dominant. Purdue can get away with, you know, not shooting well from the outside. UConn can get away with not shooting well from the outside. But Alabama, you know, Alabama goes and shot like Duke did today, they're going to get blown out of the gym. Duke lost. They're just not a good enough team to only have one guy making three-point shots. So
let me say it now. March 31st, 2024, Easter Sunday, 2024, John Shire is going to take Duke to the Final Four next year. I will put my future in as soon as it is available. Duke's going to the Final Four next year.
I mean, they've got like the best recruiting class ever.
Best recruiting class. Cooper Flagg's coming in. John Shire took him to the Sweet 16 last year. They said, hey, you know what? We're not going to get bullied again like we did against Tennessee. They beat Houston in that big test. They proved me wrong. They go to the Elite Eight. I think they advance and they go to the Final Four next year. He has them on a good trajectory. Nothing to be sad about if you're Duke, other than you lost to an 11 seed in-state rival down the street, NC State. And if you thought it was going to be an in-state rival down the street, you would think, you know, the Tar Heels. NC State is representing the ACC in the fucking Final Four. How about that? You got to love March.
So, John, you hit on it. Just to update the listeners. So, Duke next year, and I'll be pretty quick because this is a next year thing, but Cooper Flagg, as John mentioned, the number one player in the class, 6'9", small forward. They have Isaiah Evans, the number 12 player in the class, who is a 6'6", small forward. They have Con Knepel, the 17th rated player in the class. They have Patrick Ngangba, the number 18 player in the class. And then Darren Harris, number 50 player in the class. So they're just absolutely loaded.
Listen, they get talent there. No shortage of talent. I think Shire's a good coach. He has him on the upward path.
Yeah.
I wonder if that whole class will stay intact. I guess we'll see. Real quick, we'll preview the Final Four.
Before the Final Four picks, I have a miniature guess the spread for Tuesday night.
Okay.
The NIT Final
Four. The NIT. Four. Let's do it.
So we have Indiana State, Utah in the 7 p.m. game. This is in Indianapolis. Unfortunately, on ESPN, this would have been a perfect opportunity for Gus Johnson on the call, Fox, but
yeah, seriously,
not going to happen. Indiana State 31-6, Utah 22-14. What's the line?
I hope like Stephen A. Smith and Kendrick Perkins are calling these games, dude. That'd be great. It'd be great television. Give me actually Stephen A. and Chuck Barkley. Put Chuck Barkley in a little cameo performance on ESPN. He can do whatever he wants. I like Indiana State minus 1.5.
Indiana State minus 2.5. That's pretty good. What would your guess be on the total there?
I don't know. 163.
163.5.
No way. Oh, wow. I'm nice, dude. I'm sharp right now.
In the nightcap.
Sharp chatter.
Hinkle Field House as well. We have the 20-16 Dogs of Georgia against the 23-12 Seton Hall Pirates. What's the line?
Three of the four best teams that missed the tournament, Indiana State, Seton Hall, and Utah, here in the Final Four. Shout out to Georgia. They're a feisty SEC team this year. Seton Hall minus 3.5, maybe.
Seton Hall minus 4.
Damn, dude, I'm all over it. I'm fucking all over it. I might need to bet these NIT games.
What about a total?
157.5. It just felt right.
145.
Ooh, way off there. We're going to avoid that total, but we might touch the other ones a little bit. I think we might have to. And before the Final Four preview, just real quick, the bracket pool, you know, it's a 55 brackets in here. My dad is still in first, and Karen Powers, Connor's mom, is in second. Shout out to the parents. I mean, good grief. First and second. That is awesome up till the Final Four. Now, the forecast is it's not looking too optimistic for Miss Powers here. I think she has a 0% chance. Jared Becker has the highest likelihood, 40% chance to win. He has UConn Purdue in his championship, UConn winning. That is why he is the highest odds. My dad has the fourth. There are only four brackets that can possibly win yet with any likelihood. My dad is fourth of those four, even though he's in first right now, because he has UConn over Houston, and he needs NC State. If NC State wins and UConn wins and UConn wins over NC State in the title, my dad wins the bracket. If not, it'll be Jared Becker. If Purdue wins the national championship, it'll be Ben Bruns. And if it's not Ben Bruns, ESPN fan 3487287881 is going to find their way in. I don't know who that is. I can't see it right here, but John, we'll figure it out. We'll track
paid?
It down.
Has everyone paid, or do we need to call anyone out again?
I need to audit my Venmo. I think we have gotten everyone. Connor, we got to track down the two random listeners of the program, but that'll probably just be doxed. That'll probably just be doxed from third place, because honestly, third place, I wouldn't, if I was third, I wouldn't be expecting anything. So we'll find a way.
Call them out again. Names. Do we have the names on those two?
You're really putting me on the spot here.
Okay.
P Williams is one.
Okay,
and Apollyon took Auburn. He's eliminated. P. Williams did take UConn, but he has no chance of winning. But he is in the top 10. The VFL bracket is his bracket name. So we'll find you. We're going to track you down. The Final Four, it's coming upon us. There's only three games left, Chad. It's very, very sad, very depressing. I remember we talked about it last week on here, but just praying that it slowed down this past weekend. I thought it was an adequate pace. You know, I really enjoyed each game, took them all in, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. The Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, I don't think they disappointed. I think we've got a Final Four that, you know, it could be two blowouts, and maybe we'll get good games. I don't know. Again, I feel like the championship matchup is going to be inevitable, but first game of the night, NC State plays Purdue at 6:09 p.m. on TBS on Saturday. The spread is 9.5-point favorite for Purdue. Actually opened at 10, so it's ticked down a half point. The total on that is 146.5. That is down a point from the 147.5 open. Any initial thoughts on NC State Purdue here? Is there any chance that the Wolfpack Cinderella story continues and they find themselves in the championship, or is Zach Edey's inevitable run, that's the fifth time I've said it, I need to stop saying it, continue? One more game.
I think this is I'm leaning NC State spread. Expect Purdue to win. I think Burns can mix it up down there a little bit. Maybe gets Edey in foul trouble. I mean, listen, it's not likely. But give me a few cocktails on Saturday and I could be talked into, you know, an NC State play. I think is where I'm at.
What a fascinating matchup between just two bodies, just two builds between Zach Edey and DJ Burns Jr. I mean, talk about a couple of very unique bodies that are going to be banging around. Just a couple guys that are underneath. Who's going to get the best of who? Can Zach Edey top his 40-point career high in this most recent game? I don't know. I think it's possible. Right now, as it stands, Purdue may be looking ahead. Give me NC State to cover. Let's have some fun. And I'm taking the under in that, too. I like the under probably the most, actually. If I were to take a lock, if you want a lock in this game, under 146.5 is that lock for me. But I'm gonna lean NC State for some fun.
Yeah. All right.
On the night matchup, I'll say Purdue wins. I'll say Cinderella comes to an end. NC State, keep it close for us. Give us something to cheer for. Let's have some fun. I think a good defensive game's in store, and I think you could get a look ahead spot for Purdue. Who knows? Late game, 8:49 p.m. on TBS. Alabama plays UConn. Alabama is an 11.5-point underdog. The total of this game is 15 points higher. It's set at 161.5. The spread is at the same spot that it opened at. The total is a half point higher. Chad, any initial thoughts?
There is not a shot in hell I fade UConn. We talked about it earlier. Alabama needs to make at a minimum 16 threes, I think, for this game to even be competitive. Not even saying they win, but for it to be competitive, I don't see that happening. I think Dan the Man is going to have a plan to try and limit, you know, the quick trigger threes from Alabama. And I mean, if they're able to slow this game down, it could get ugly. So I will
Dan,
be on UConn spread.
Dan the Man with the plan. See, I think a guy like DJ Horn and a Mike O'Connell, you know, some of these guys for NC State, I think Purdue could be sleeping and looking ahead. I don't think Dan the Man with the plan is going to let UConn sleep and look ahead against Alabama, especially a team, you know, Alabama's got a lot of hype right now. They've put up a ton of points. And that is a very publicized, very, 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 very in your face offensive strategy right now that Nate Oates is employing. I like what you're saying. I do lean UConn. I think that NC State Purdue game, because of the DJs, you know, sleepy factor on the Purdue side, I think that one could be the closer game. I think Bama's going to have a hard time if this strategy of theirs, if Nate Oates is three and around the, you know, attack the basket offense, has any challenges. I mean, I don't know how they're going to attack the basket with Klingon and Caravan, you know, especially Klingon, unless he gets in foul trouble. You know, Pringle's going to need to have the game of his life underneath for this one to be close, and they're going to need to hit again 40%+ of their threes.
John,
I feel a lot better about UConn winning big than Purdue.
I'm going to put together a seventh rounder special spread. -20.5, the combined ish spread of both games. Would you take UConn Purdue combined -20.5, or are you taking Alabama NC State +20.5?
It'd be 20 based on the if you combine the Vegas numbers, it would be 21.5 on the opening lines. So I respect it. I love the question. It's a hard question. I lay the points because I think UConn wins by 20. I think Purdue wins by 7. That's just what I'm feeling right there, but that would lay the number with it. I think Cam Spencer is going to have a really big game for UConn. I think Cam Spencer drops 25-30 points for UConn. Star of the show for them in this one. So, I mean, in that hypothetical, Purdue, let's say it's Purdue, UConn's the championship. I think that's what we both got. At that point, I've got UConn going back to back. They're the only future I've left. I took a future on them +210 before the Sweet 16. That's all I've got left from a future perspective. Go Huskies, go back to back. You guys, if there's a team that's going to be the first to do it since Florida did it in the early 2000s, UConn is there damn good 2 years in a row. They've got the roster. They've been the team all season. I think Dan the man will have the plan. It's going to be tough to take them down.
I agree.
I tell you what, Kling and Edie, though, will be a treat. If that is the championship that we get, Kling and Edie is going to be an awesome big man battle. You got a bunch of guards that can shoot, and it would be really, really fun. I hope we get good games. I'm really excited to cheer on DJ Burns one more time and watch this Wolfpack team. I hope they keep it close. From a viewer's perspective, for the championship game Monday, it probably would be best for Purdue to win that game and for UConn to win that game, because that would be a hell of a national championship. Any closing thoughts ahead of the Final Four for college basketball?
We have 3 games left in the year, folks. I don't include the NIT stuff in that. So 3 games left. You got to enjoy it. I know it's a bummer the title falls on a Monday night, but if we get the matchup we're expecting to get. Say that again.
The worst that it's a Monday. Kills me.
Yeah. Just enjoy it. I mean, time flies just like that. I mean, I feel like we're back early January, transitioning from football to basketball, and here we are. Because, folks, before long, we're going to have quite a few months of really just baseball with a little NBA, NHL. So,
I mean,
enjoy the slate.
The beautiful thing, and it's not beautiful because the thing, you know, about it is like the season would be over, but at about, let's say it's an 8 p.m. tip time, it'll probably be 9:30 or 9:45, knowing the NCAA on Monday the 8th. The minute after that ends, I am scouting for Feast Week 2024. I mean, I'm pulling up the schedules for the early season tournaments. Give me the Maui Field right now. Let's see the Virgin Islands. Let's see the Charleston Classic. I want all of them. I can't wait. We're going to start looking at Feast Week. We're going to start looking at those events. Maybe buy some tickets. Who knows? Maybe a seventh rounders giveaway takes place if I get fired up enough. UConn wins the title. Yeah. Anything could happen.
Placing early bets. Yep. Week 0.
Well, we'll break down, you know, obviously the Final Four, the national championship game. We'll give you guys our conference, you know, all tournament teams following the result, you know, this coming weekend. Like Chad said, enjoy these last few games responsibly. A quick last call. It's going to be non-college basketball related for both of us. Chad, I'll go first. And you might want to piggyback off of it. I'll just say both. The Pirates and Yankees, season sweeps in the opening season series. You got a couple 4-0 teams. Chad, we're 8-0 combined. How does it feel? The Pirates and Yankees might meet in the World Series at this rate.
John, I at this rate, we could have a little World Series matchup, but I will say enjoy it while it lasts for both teams, just because it can spiral quickly. But no, I mean, listen, baseball's been fun to start the year, and especially it's a little more enjoyable when the Yankees are playing well, when the Pirates are playing well. You got some fantasy guys on those teams to enjoy. So no,
I mean,
baseball season is here.
Pirates were down a couple of these games, a couple, you know, went into extra innings. They put up 9 runs twice. They're averaging like 7-8 runs. Like they, I understand it was the Marlins. Marlins might not be great. Marlins had the best ERA in, I think, the NL last year from a pitching staff perspective. They can pitch. Pirates put up runs. It was on the road. Very proud of it. Could be an exciting team there. That core of talent doesn't get enough credit. But yeah, shout out to the Yankees, dude. Juan Soto looking like an early season MVP front runner. He's making a difference in the field and at the plate. Good luck to the Yanks. Good luck to the Pirates. Baseball's back. You know, fantasy baseball's here. We'll be mixing. That'll be the main probably talking point a lot of these episodes during the dog days that are really, really close to us. It's also almost TV show season for me. I finished Masters of the Air today, but I'll be on my TV show grind. That April to August time frame, you know, really got to catch up on shows when I can there without the sports.
So you got emotional with the Masters of the Air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, always had to.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I want to give a quick last shout out to, I forget which, the UFL started this weekend. Not that I care about the UFL, but a kicker made a 64-yarder. He hadn't kicked since high school. He was a kickoff specialist in college, hadn't kicked a field goal since high school, signed to, I forget what team it was this offseason, and banged a 64-yarder with 8 seconds left to give his team the lead. Well, bad host, but I don't remember what team, but shouts out to him.
I'm going to be honest, dude. I turned that on today. I turned that league on today, and about 6 minutes later, I shut it off and I started doing my expense report. I wasn't interested, completely disinterested. Actual last call, final call. Then we're going to get out of here. You're going to get on with your weeks and we're going to be on to the final four. The women's tournament's been fantastic. South Carolina's a wagon. We're going to get an LSU-Iowa rematch tomorrow night, folks. Tune in. Ladies' final four should be shaping up to be pretty fun. South Carolina's going to play UConn coming up here. Hopefully the Gamecocks continue to wagon along into the Final Four and win another title. Shout out Don Staley and the co. And folks, with that, have a responsible week. Give Connor and Chad a listen. Excuse me, Connor and Dave a listen as they come to you live. It's Seventh Rounders After Dark. We're getting late. We need to go to sleep. Get on with your evenings, the rest of your weeks. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Production by AJ Bradbury.